Welcome to season two of the Good Market Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Cunningham. Each month, we hear from good people with great products, supporting exceptional causes, and making incredible impacts on communities around the world. Join us now as we hear another good story about impact that's happening right near you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another special episode of Good Market Live. Today, I am happy to be joined by my new friend, Lisa Bradley, one of the co-founders of Our Riveter Bags. Lisa, welcome to Good Market Live.
Hi, Harry. I'm so excited to be here.
It's exciting for us to get to talk a little bit more. We are coming off of an event of you being up in Good Market and meeting our customers, which was a load of fun. But I'm excited to share your story to an even broader audience today and tell them a little bit about who you are, where you've been, where you came from, and how you ended up where you are today. So let's just jump right in. So handbags, not something that every young girl growing up thinks, that's what I'm going to do. And I don't think it was how you started either, right?
Right, exactly. You know, I grew up in Montana. I think everyone back then, if I had told them I'd started a handbag company, they would have probably laughed me home. But, starting a handbag company, it's such a saturated market. So I think a lot of people always asked us, why handbags? And to tell you the truth, we started with the idea of the business model way before handbags. And so we'll probably get into that a little bit. But yeah. Handbags are... We're ending up glad that we went that route because it's essentially your chosen skin. It's like clothing. You pick a brand based on how it makes you feel, how you want to portray yourself to the world. And so we really wanted to go with handbags because you don't switch it out every day. You pick a handbag brand or a handbag look, and it's really your partner throughout your daily mission. And so we really wanted handbags to stand up to what we really believe in.
Very cool. So you touched on a little bit, you were born in Montana. So let's go back to like early Lisa days. So you were born in Montana. Now you're living
really
in Ohio.
Roll it back here.
Yeah, we're going to roll it back. Yeah, so tell me like how you ended up from Montana, like leaving Montana and venturing out.
Yeah. Well, my parents were both entrepreneurs. My dad wrote a lot of the software behind Timeshare. So I really knew the entrepreneurial life, the ups and downs of it, the travel, and really just seeing a mom and a dad juggle entrepreneurial life, and always saw myself starting my own business one day. But I married into the military when I met my husband and then quickly moved. I finished college as quick as I could so I could move to be with him. And I started to realize that maybe entrepreneurship was not going to be in the cards as a military spouse. Because of the moving and the really just the lifestyle of him supporting our country and how in depth his career is, sometimes the spouse has to take a backseat to that. And starting your own business and being able to do that can be really difficult with those moves and also just a primary position in the company or in the family, him taking kind of more of the breadwinner. It's really difficult to do that as the support.
Interesting. So funny enough, though, you weren't alone in your early thinking about that. You met somebody who was kind of living the same life as you, I guess, right?
Right, yeah. And so many other military spouses, same thing. You know, I moved four times by the time I was 24.
Wow.
Getting married and then moved four times. And I had no idea what it was going to be like to be a military spouse. Said I do, and then I quickly figured it out. And didn't know a lot of military spouses growing up in Montana. Wasn't a base near us. So I really just dove in and started to see, okay, this is what it's going to be like. And I think one of my first real experiences was everyone kept referring to myself, to other military spouses, to children in the military as dependents. And I thought that was just a very strange word to refer to family members. But after those multiple moves and really starting to feel dependent, you know, Cameron and I, who is my co-founder, we'll talk about our meeting, really wanted to create something that really gave that sense of independence and self-identity back to military spouses.
Yeah, which not something that I would have known about or thought about having not spent any time, you know, in a military family, but really interesting approach and probably something that, you know, women like yourself or spouses like yourself have sort of managed and had to deal with. And I think that idea of going from spouse to dependent back to spouse might have been a challenging journey. But so you met Cameron, Where were you all living when you met?
Yeah. So our families had independently moved to Dahlonega, Georgia. It's right at the foothills of the Appalachian Trail. Outside of Atlanta, it's a very small camp. It's where actually they train ranger school. So our husbands were both ranger instructors there. So not only are we out in the middle of nowhere, but there's not a lot of businesses around there. I had my MBA and my co-founder, Cameron, had her master's in architecture. And we both set out to start looking for jobs. And we were young military spouses, excited to see what was next. We both just finished our graduate degrees, and interview after interview, we could just see that employers were putting our resumes really at the bottom of the pile.
Wow.
And we quickly realized that we weren't going to find a long-term career. And this was something that we were going to struggle with for a long time.
Was that the biggest thing, Lisa? Because they were putting you at the bottom of the pile, not because you weren't talented or able to do the job, but more because they knew they couldn't count on you long-term. Like you might be
exactly
there.
Exactly, right. I mean, our resumes show it. They're so fragmented. We have this job here, this job there. And of course, they're saying, well, how come you're moving positions so frequently? And of course, you want to answer, well, I'm not just leaving because I want to, but you do have to bring up that you're a military spouse. And they're used to that in these heavy, prevalent military areas. And you know, being on the other side of it, I can't say that I don't understand what they're going through as employers. You want to train somebody and you want the longevity of your investment. And so Cameron and I said, you know, enough is enough. We had talked to so many other military spouses. You know, when we first moved there, everybody was so excited about what jobs they were going to have. And then quickly they call them FRG meetings. You know, I could just hear the conversation took a huge downturn and everyone was starting to give up. And that wasn't just this post. That was all the ones we'd moved to over the years. And so Cameron and I said, you know, if we're going to ever have anything for ourselves, then let's create a business model that supports military spouses.
Genius. And you both come from, obviously, like you talked about, an MBA and an architecture degree, very different backgrounds, but both struggling with something together. And arguably, maybe that's what brought you together, is that you did come from different strengths and different backgrounds and said, like, what can we do together, right?
Right, absolutely. We had only met each other for 2 weeks when we said, let's start this business. So I think our husbands thought we were crazy, that we were essentially diving into being business married to each other after only two full weeks of dating. But we really did have the right skill sets that were opposite of each other to really start and create a long-term business model.
So when you had the idea, let's start a business, but did you know what business, or was it more just like, let's start a business together, let's do something?
Well, she had been creating, they were actually like little baby booties, and she had been sewing them, and she was thinking about selling them. And I had gone through my business degree, and the books I read, it's actually on the shelf behind me. It was the book about FedEx and how Frederick Smith started FedEx and how he actually wrote a paper during college where he came up with this really disruptive idea that packages would have to be sent in the opposite direction in order to create a more efficient system. And so I had just finished reading that book, and Cameron and I said, let's start a business model that we know that we can employ other military spouses. So it was at the forefront that whatever it was going to be, it was going to be figuring out a way that we could hire military spouses, but they had to be able to move and they had to be able to have a flexible working environment, because they're really pulling three shifts. They're not just military spouses. They're also sometimes a parent. And then we also want them to be able to be part of our business model. So that means that it needs to be flexible. And at the time, there was just not work from home opportunities. This was 2011, and really the only work from home were direct selling models where you really had to leverage your friends and family in order to make an income for yourself. And we didn't want our business model to have to include that. We wanted it to be something you could start up, not put a lot of investment in. And so we said, let's create a distributed manufacturing model where military spouses can make the parts and pieces from home whenever it best fits their needs. And then they can ship it to us where we make the product.
That's very cool. And interesting that you sort of use tools that you had. Materials that you had that were kind of at your fingertips, right? But you were telling me a little bit of a story of early on when you and Cameron were making some prototypes that might have caused a little bit of consternation, maybe.
Yeah, right, exactly. we were just modest military families, so we didn't have a lot of disposable cash to put into this business model. And I think our husbands were like, can we have a little bit of a proof of concept before we invest a ton into this? So the only place we could set up shop was actually was Cameron's attic. It was actually above a garage. She had a little boy at the time. She was the only one of us that had kids at the time.
Did so it we have air conditioning? Because you're in Georgia and not above a garage is like in the summer, a sauna, right?
No temperature control whatsoever. And we actually saw in the corner, her husband had a stack of Army issued equipment. And one of the things in there was a pup tent. And I don't know if you know much about that, but it's actually, they're called pup tents or shelter half. The reason it has that name is because you have to find a buddy to have the other half and it makes a full tent.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we were like, oh, this would make a great outside of a handbag. It's it's water resistant. It's durable. It's lightweight. Let's cut it up. It's a great idea. And so we did. And it actually made our first 7 handbags that we took to a little farmer's market the next weekend. But that was really the beginning of our business model, you know. And we actually hand-stitched the first bag. It took us 7 days each to stitch one half of it. It's a dop kit that my husband still uses today. And we said, we're going to need to invest in an industrial sewing machine because we just cannot do this. It's going to take forever to make any products. So that was actually our first big purchase as founders of the company.
Very cool. And so those 7 that you took to the farmer's market, did you sell all 7?
We did sell all 7. One of them, it was actually a couple months later, this lady came back and she's like, I just love this handbag. I love the story. It's so functional. I can tell you guys made it as moms and really just developed it knowing what we need as really modern day women who are busy. And we were so excited. We're like, this is our customer that came back. And she looked at me and she's like, there's only one problem. The pocket on the inside is upside down.
Oops.
Yep. So my co-founder looked at me. She knew it was right away. It was me because she just has this phenomenal ability to sew and construct. And so I was definitely forcing it for me to make it in those early days. But it was a good thing that happened. It got me over to the things that I needed to be focusing on, which was the business side, the more of the marketing and the really the books and keeping HR and all those things.
All that stuff.
It was a happen chance.
So I kind of like having a little moment about these 7 bags. Like, have you ever been able to get one back?
You know, my cousin has one.
Okay.
We look at them and we want to make sure that no one ever sees them again. They were so bad.
I was watching an auction show over the weekend about people collecting things. And there's so many times, I guess, when people create something like what you did and then they don't have it anymore. The original, they don't have it anymore. And then they try and like go try and find it back. So that's why I was curious if you'd been able to get one of those original.
We do have one. And my husband's dop kit, he still has. It's actually sitting on in his office now. I'm like, you can't use that anymore. It's the first bag we ever made. And so we still have that. And it's just funny because you can see where I like ran off the edge with the sewing machine stitch. So it's like, it's just so bad.
So did Cameron know how to sew and you didn't know how to sew? Is that right?
Right. Well, we both knew how to sew. She was just way better at it than
okay.
I was.
That's great. That's funny enough. So you got these 7 bags. You go to the farmer's market. Hey, maybe we're onto something, right? So so where do you go from there? What's next?
Yeah.
What's
so the next step? Had the 7. We took our whole entire investment and put it into this industrial sewing machine. I'm sure Rosie the Riveter used it. It was so old. Mm-hmm. But they made things so much better back then, you know, and so we still have that machine. We call her Rosie. We actually pulleyed system it up into the attic and because it was this like 150-pound sewing machine. So the two of us got it up into the attic that day. And then we also invested the rest of it. Funny enough that you talk about temperature control was into insulation for the attic because it was so cold. Now, you think it would be it was the winter in North Georgia.
Oh, yeah. So also cold.
And so,
yeah.
So,
hot
so cold.
And cold, yeah.
And I'm from Montana and I was cold. So we, you know, I was wearing actually full out snow gear to sew in.
Wow.
And we got a propane heater and I started my winter pants on fire one day. So that's
I was going to say, that's awfully safe to have in an attic.
Yes, it's not a good idea. I'm not saying anybody should do these things.
Yeah.
So then we went and invested in insulation. So we put this pink insulation up all over the attic and then we put plastic to keep it up and it looked like a Dexter room. It was just awful. So a lot of people think like that the beginning of a business is this glamorous, like Pinterest perfect environment. And Cameron won't even let me show the pictures of those early days. So
save it for the book. There will be a book. Save it for the book.
There'll be a book.
So when you made these seven bags, did you have the name already? Or tell me like the how the name came about.
Yeah,
obviously, so you know, it's a great connection, but how did you pick
Cameron? And actually, she took me to an airport one day, and that's actually when we started talking about it. And we were so frustrated about not being able to find jobs. And so on the drive to the airport, we said, okay, we're going to start a business, and it's going to be in some form or other a distributed manufacturing system. At the time, we didn't even know it was handbags. That kind of came probably a month later or a couple weeks later. And then so I flew home. It was Veterans Day and actually my co-founder's birthday. And we sat down and we started looking at names for the company. Mm-hmm. And I brought a list to her. And it's funny enough that I started out with the branding. And that same day, she did a spreadsheet. And I think we both kind of looked at each other like, oh my God, we're not.
We're doing the wrong thing.
We're doing the wrong thing. So she looked at, I had like 15 names. Our Riveter was one of them. The other 14 were so bad. I'm glad that nobody knows about them. But I also took a stab at the logo.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably where she was like, oh my God, think I'm going to take this over. You can go ahead and take the spreadsheet. And from that point forward, we kind of knew each other's skill set and best places in the company. But our Riveter was one of them. And she looked at it and she's like, I think this is it. And we loved how it didn't scream Rosie the Riveter. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know the history of our country and you know who Rosie the Riveter was, it's definitely a nod to her. Mm-hmm. And really not even based really in being a military spouse, because Rosie the Riveter wasn't necessarily a military spouse. She was a woman of that era who didn't just stand on the sidelines. She dove into helping her country in a time of need. And we really,
which is arguably what you guys did too.
Exactly. So it's a completely different era. We saw a need for really a different type of work opportunity for the modern day woman who wanted to be able to have a family and be able to have an income from themselves and be able to re-identify yourself if you are moving quite frequently. Mm-hmm. And so we thought that Rosie the Riveter would be a great namesake for our company.
That's great. So you talked about this phrase distributive manufacturing, right? Was anybody doing mm-hmm. that then? Or is that something that, you know, were you guys kind of on the pioneer stage of that?
I think that it happens more on a local level. If there's kind of more of a local-based manufacturing centers that happen. It goes out in the same city and comes back at the time. And I think even to this day, I don't hear of it because it's mm-hmm. quite frankly not very efficient. And probably no business that's completely concerned with profits would never do it.
Yeah.
But that's not the reason why we do it. We do it to be able to provide opportunity, and we invest a lot of money into being able to ship those pieces back and forth all across the country.
Sure. And how many states do you have people now?
We have
working in
30 Riveters, and they're almost each in a different state.
Wow.
And then we also have close to 35 employees, and many of them are in other states. So I think we're at 35 states that we're in.
Kind of interesting thing to me as I was thinking about that after the first time that we talked. You know, post-pandemic, companies have employees scattered everywhere now. Mm-hmm. You were doing that before it was kind of the cool thing to do. Have you seen that impact the culture of your company negatively and or positively?
Yes, it's definitely a mixed bag. You know, we from 2011, we've been searching for tools and processes in order to bring this company that's across states really together in a more efficient manner. I mean, not just from running the company day to day, but also from a morale. Back in, I think it was probably 2017 or 2018, we made it mandatory to have your video on when in a company meeting, and that made a mm-hmm. huge difference. I think not just in like making sure that everybody stays on task, but also just seeing another human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went from knowing, there's actually Cheryl, she started with our company 1 year after us. She started in quality control and has worked her way all the way into being our office manager. And I didn't meet her for 7 years.
Wow.
So, wow. We met for the first time and I couldn't believe how tall she was. She's such a tall woman. I was like, I would have had no idea. But up until that point, she knew every little thing about me. She'd gone through the birth of two kids and really became not just a key part of our team, but also a great friend.
And I think it's interesting, the ability to adapt maybe comes easier because military spouses are so used to having to readapt and reacclimate every time they move. Maybe that just has become a natural part of, you know, the sort of the thread of the company.
Right. And absolutely. You know, we actually just launched a handbag today about military spouses and wildflowers. And it's exactly that concept of, you know, you have to be, we're all each individuals, and we have to remain unique because a lot of times we're alone. We're raising families. We're having to just adapt to whatever environment we're in and be able to make it work.
Very cool. So there was something that happened kind of midway, I would say midway through the life of from when you started to where you are today, that's pretty exciting change that happened with the company. But I'd love to talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, I'm, at this point, we're still kind of in the attic and we're growing. My co-founder's husband is getting frustrated because there's so many cars coming and picking up pieces. And he's like, I can't even go into the house and use the restroom. Like, there's just, it's constantly full of people. So at that time, he said, you know, I think it's time that as their family was PCSing to a different location, he was very vocal and a very good thing because it was really that thing that pushed us to the next level about us starting our own, like an actual manufacturing location. Mm-hmm. And we really wanted to partner that with a retail store. So we actually did a Kickstarter and we filmed it there in Dahlonega and put it out into the world and saw what kind of reaction we would get. And I think one of the most unique things that came out to it was there was actually a producer from ABC that reached out to me and was curious about us if we ever wanted to try to apply for Shark Tank. And so I said, I think I might have said, if you're a producer from Shark Tank, then I'm Vera Bradley, with the last name of Bradley. And I almost hung up on him. But then I was like, with the questions he was asking, I'm like, wow, this really is a producer from Shark Tank.
Yeah.
So Cameron and I sat down and we said, you know, like when you're trying to grow a company, you know, this could go really good for us, or it could be the end of it, depending on how this goes. And we said, you know, if we ever want to grow, we want to be able to provide as many income opportunities to this really amazing group of individuals in America, then the last thing we should be doing is saying no. Mm-hmm. So we took months to prepare for Shark Tank.
I can't months even imagine.
And it was one of the best things we ever did, was just taking the breath to stop and look at our whole business. We actually did a mock tank with, I think it was 10 lawyers out of Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, geez.
And it was grueling. And at the end of it, they said, okay, anybody that would invest in this company, please raise your hand. And nobody raised their hand.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know, we were about ready to go on to Shark Tank. So we were like, oh my gosh, what are we getting ourselves into? Yes. And so, you know, they said, we love the business model. We love what you're doing. We just don't like your scaling plan. We want you to redo it. So we had already memorizing all the numbers. So we had already memorized everything to go into the tank. And we said, okay, well, we can't, you know, they have a valid point about our scaling plan. And so we sat back down and we said, this is how we need to do it. And so really 2 weeks before the tank, I was completely redoing our whole entire plan.
Wow.
And it was very nerve wracking.
But it's good you did that rehearsal. I mean, I can't, I'm a fan of Shark Tank and I watch it. And I'm always like, how do they, the stuff that you have to like rattle off, and you never know, I guess you don't know going in what questions they're going to ask you, right?
Yeah, none. I mean, the only way we had an idea is we watched like every episode of Shark Tank. And I think to this day, when Cameron's kids hear that music come on, they're like, no, they're so sick of hearing it. But we did watch a ton of episodes and wrote down all the questions that we could possibly think of and then gave our answers to them, to each other.
Yeah.
And that's really how we prepared for it. And it went really well. We got on the show. It went really great. It was an amazing experience to be able to go in there and be able to tell our story and really just lay it all on the line and see how America's top business leaders reacted to our business decisions over the last, 6 years.
And did you hear an I'm out?
We didn't get a full I'm out. We got, I think you can do this better on your own. We also got, you know, we got three offers, but the two that didn't was, I think you can do this better on your own. Don't sell out. And then also, I don't do this kind of thing. I do more of like trinket type stuff that you buy overseas, which was a completely different product.
Sure.
And so we respected that and we were really excited to hear throughout our presentation that Mark Cuban was just really enthralled with what we were doing and was really behind it. So we actually ended up choosing Mark and we love him. He's been an amazing investor, and he's still really That's involved
great.
Today.
That's great. And it's great that you know to hear that. And I think as entrepreneurs that might be listening, when you're looking for investors, that's the kind of investor you want. You want somebody that's going to be involved, but is going to let you run your business, right?
And that's where it came down to that. We knew that he wasn't going to have us change what we were doing or why we were doing it for the bottom line. And to this day, he's never asked us to do that. And we couldn't have picked a better shark because of that.
That's great. So fast forward to where you are today. You've opened a store. You have a store.
Yes, we have a flagship store in North Carolina.
Cool.
And
what was the thinking to open the flagship store?
Largely it was to get out of Cameron's attic. That was the first store. So it was really out of necessity. I was really dragging my feet on it because that was a lot of overhead.
Yeah.
But it was really great that we did that because, it was the beginning, and that's where we had actually our first place that we were manufacturing our items to. So it was a dual purpose space. We sold out of it, but then you could also hear the sewing machines,
Super cool.
Rolling in the background where all those parts and pieces were coming together. So it was a really unique retail experience. We've moved 2 times in the same town, just to bigger spaces. And we're now on Broad Street, and it's a beautiful store right there in Southern Pines, North Carolina.
Very cool. But neither of you live in North Carolina.
Her husband just retired, and they just moved from there to his hometown.
Got it.
But up until last year, Cameron had been stationed there.
Oh, okay. Got it. So is that weird, kind of having a store that you can't be in every day?
It is, but we have an amazing team that has managed it for years and years. So I think as military spouses, you have to know that you have to eventually let go at that location, and you set it up knowing that you're going to be leaving.
Right.
And that kind of helps.
So I want to talk about some elements of the bag that are pretty intriguing to me and kind of interesting that I think people should know about if they didn't already know. One of them is on the bottom left corner of the bag, there's a little tag, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what's on that
absolutely.
Tag?
It's our story tag. Being able to tell the story of the company and the individuals as part of the company is really what it's all about. So every remote riveter, as we call them, and also every individual throughout the whole entire company receives a riveter number. So you'll see an RR and then a number, a 3-digit code. And that is the number that we give each individual. And it's actually a throwback to Rosie the Riveter. At the time, they had quality control numbers. And I had the opportunity to meet an original Rosie the Riveter. And she told me the story when she found out that I have these numbers on our products, that she had a really special story for her. She was making parts for a submarine, and her nephew was on the ship on the submarine. And I guess they had ran into something, or they had an emergency, and he looked over and he saw his aunt's river number.
Oh, very
cool. And it was a really serendipitous moment for him to be like, okay, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But every part that they made, they put their number on, and we do that today as well. So the parts and pieces all across the country, the military spouses are making the liner of the product, really any textile that can be sewn on a home sewing machine they make, and they put their number on it. And that's really, we have a first, we have a last name, but we also have a riveter number. Mm-hmm. And it's an important aspect of our company, just about really taking ownership of what you're doing.
That's great. And it's interesting, you called them remote riveters, which also works with the R riveter. So R works for Rosie the Riveter, or also
right. Lots of R's in here.
lots of R's. So then the other piece is the tag that hangs on the bag. There, it's kind of a two-part tag, one dog tag, right? Which makes a lot of sense.
Right. Yep. And so then we also have a yellow support tag.
Yeah.
And a lot of people ask us, what is it? It's this circular piece of leather that hangs on every single one of our bags, and it has a ribbon on it. And we've been making them literally since those 7 bags in the attic. And what they symbolize is supporting the military. And one of my fondest moments of living on post was all the trees that had a yellow ribbon around them. Mm-hmm. And there's songs about it, but that's really where the support ribbon was yellow for the military support. So you can see that hanging on every single one of our products.
That's great. I know there's several different things that you do with your bags. Obviously you can buy from the line, but there's also some really special kind of one of a kinds or limited editions, right? Which I've seen, I think, are amazing. My favorite is the one that has the kind of the parachute straps on the back that converts it into a backpack.
Right. Yeah. So that's our heirloom line, and it's, really special. Like there's not anything I think on the market that really can even explain the emotion that goes in behind them. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're a daughter and your parent went overseas. But we all have these attachments to materials, and there's experiences attached to materials. And so what we really have been able to do is take those materials and turn it into a handbag. And I really love when I see family members be able to pass them down, mm-hmm. because at one point that material had a life where it went overseas, or that person was able to accomplish something great, or really became attached to that material. And now it's getting a whole new life and becoming something different to somebody else.
Interesting. Super cool. And then people can actually go to your site and create their own true one of a kind, right?
Right. So yeah, we try and help out that like a jacket can make this style and that style, and you can really start to piece together how many pieces you can get out of a upcycled military uniform, and then really figure out what pieces you can put together of those items. And that's all on our website to be able to do that.
So what, you've got the line of handbags, which is fantastic. One of the neat things that you do also, which I think has an interesting connection back to the name, is the scarves, right?
Right. Yeah. The scarves that go on each of our products, or some of our handbags have really kind of cool scarves that tie onto them, and you can kind of change them out throughout the season. And we really have enjoyed having that really extension of the line.
And it sort of harkens back to Rosie the Riveter, who had the scarf.
Rosie the Riveter around
I
think that everybody kind of remembers, if not Rosie the Riveter, at least remembers the poster. And so we actually had a ton of denim that we made into a bag that it was inspired by actually the Navy. And we had so many rolls of denim left, and we didn't know what we were going to do with this material. And so we actually had some red material. We had the denim. And we actually made a limited edition Rosie the Riveter bag where the overalls were the denim, and then we had a red scarf on it. And to this day, it's our best-selling handbag.
That's cool.
And I think you actually have them in store, too.
Yeah, we do. We actually do. One of the things that you and I were talking about last time we talked, too, was the names, where the names come from each of the bags, right? So it's not, they're not just like random. They actually have a reason and a story behind them.
Right. So we name all the products after inspiring women in America's history. And it actually started as the military spouse of a famous military man that we all know. So actually, I think my favorite story is actually the Patton. So when we used to say, when we first started, this is the Patton, well, everyone just assumed it was the military man we were talking about. And what we were trying to portray is that there's an equally amazing spouse that supports mm-hmm. that individual. And so actually that handbag was named after Mrs. Patton. And she mm-hmm. wrote a lot of the training manuals behind what he was doing. Just enough Hawaiian to write a whole book in it. So she was an amazing woman in her own right. And they were really attached hip to hip throughout his whole entire military career.
Very cool. I mean, and I love that what you're doing is not only just giving opportunities, but you're also celebrating the military spouse in a really big way, which is, right. You know, perhaps long overdue, but it's great that you're doing it. And you know, maybe there's even opportunity for more people to do kind of follow your lead, if you will.
It's storytelling. And, you know, I think that everyone hears a story in a little bit of a different way. And I think the thing that always really helped comfort me was that I was not the first military spouse to be going through this. I was not the first military spouse to receive a letter from overseas missing my spouse. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not the first one to come. I'm certainly not going to be the last, but we're all in this together.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I, when you were here visiting the store, we were talking to a mom whose son is about to be deployed. And I think that the idea of you telling stories was arguably, you know, she's in a sort of this very bittersweet place, like super excited for her son mm-hmm. to go and support the country, and, you know, equally very concerned because she's a mom. But I think it, you know, the more that you can tell those stories, and maybe, you know, it impacts everybody all along the way. And she was inspired to even, you know, pick up a bag that day because it kind of gave her this sense of connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that it brings these military stories forward. And sometimes you need to be able to talk about it. She's nervous and she's excited. Being able to tell that story and have that connection with another person that's gone through the same thing, yeah. I think is what being human is all about. So that's one of the best parts about that, really, that yellow support tag on the bag, is it really symbolizes that this is what I'm supporting. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's subtle, but it also one of my favorite stories was hearing about two women that crossed paths at an Aldi, and they both had a Riveter bag, and they both took 5 minutes out of their day to tell each other about their military sons.
Yeah.
And that to me really made it all worth it, is being able to put something out into the world that really helps somebody start a conversation is really what it's all about.
I mean, you're really making connections, which is it's the connections start when you do the distributed manufacturing, right? There's the first connection, but then the connection keeps going and keeps going, which is really, right. I mean, it becomes each bag. I don't want to sound cheesy, but each bag really becomes an heirloom piece because it has a story behind it.
Absolutely.
Before it even gets to the owner that, you know, buys it off the shelf.
Well, and each one is different because each part was made by a different individual, and it started someplace else in the country. So each piece truly is different. Being handmade like that, you are getting a one of a kind piece.
And you don't know where it's come from, but you do know kind of where it's come from at the same time, right? You don't
Absolutely.
Know the physical place that it's come from, but you know the hands that have been on it.
You can go to and look up the Riveter number. Our website, and you can see the military spouse that made it, and or the employee that assembled it, where we really are dedicated to bringing as many jobs back to America as we possibly can.
That's fantastic. What's next for the brand? You have bags, you have accessories, you have backpacks. What's next?
You know, we're always looking to create other products that can be made in the same model. We actually just launched candles about a year and a half ago, and that's been really amazing to be able to branch out to service spouses. So actually, a fire spouse makes those, and it's kind of fun that she makes the candle that makes the fire and he puts it out. But so it's been a great collaboration that we've been able to do alongside the handbags, just to be able to have another product that you know where it comes from, and you know that you're helping someone that's dedicated to serving here in America as well.
And what's your favorite? This is always a funny question that I get asked too about all the brands that we carry at Good Market, but what's your favorite bag? Do you have one? I think you do.
Yes. The Otto is my favorite bag. And I actually had the honor of meeting Eleanor Otto. Mm-hmm. She is the longest working Rosie the Riveter. She was forced to retire at 94, which no one should have to be forced to stop working if they didn't want to. But I actually saw her at a gala, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, Eleanor, we have got to go to bed. I'm so tired. So if I just have a little bit of her energy, hopefully if I make it to that age, but she's just a spunky, like amazing role model.
Very cool.
Her handbag that we named it after is my favorite.
So back to a little bit of the beginning of the story, you said you came from entrepreneurial parents. You've been a pretty amazing entrepreneur so far. Your kids only know you as an entrepreneur, right? Would you encourage them to do it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's the best way to be able to have a family and also be able to help out your American economy. You know, I think my kids, you know, my husband had the coolest job. He jumped out of airplanes and got the bad guys, you know, like it's, so I hope that looking back, they see that, you know, Cameron's kids and mine see that their moms did something for America too. And was able to do it through creating a business in America. You know, I think you can still do it. If we can do it in an attic, then anybody can.
Yeah. And you know, you and I were talking a little bit about that. Like it definitely comes with struggles, but not struggles that are not overcomable, if you will, wrong word, but sure. You know what I mean? Like you can overcome them. And part of that network that you're building, arguably, you know, when you meet military spouses that all sort of have that connection, entrepreneurs, I think are similar to that. Like we've all been kind of up the hills and down in the valleys, and you know, we can kind of get it, sort of like the two women you talked about that got to share that story.
I mean, you feed off of each other, you know, when I think one of the best things that came out of Shark Tank too was just the other military connected companies. We're all really close. You know, it's not competitive. Whenever we have something that works, we call each other and we're like, hey, you guys should try this. It might really, really, really helpful. And I think that in also the social good entrepreneurial community, we're the same way. You know, none of us are really direct competitors, but what we are doing is working together to make the world a better place.
Right.
So if I do something that, you know, really has been able to help our mission grow, I definitely want other companies that are very like-minded to be able to grow in the same way.
Yeah, very cool. So as we wrap up, you know, one of the things, and you've gotten to visit our store here in Fort Wayne, so you know, one of the things that we really feel strongly about and will always be a part of who we are is storytelling. And we want to tell the stories, and we tell the stories of every single brand, and we call our team the storytellers. if somebody at some point needed to tell the Lisa Bradley story, this is how I wrap up every podcast. So I always like to know, who would Lisa pick to tell her story and why? And it could be anybody, living, dead. I like to say famous or infamous or otherwise. Mm-hmm. But who would you pick to tell your story and why?
You know, I'd pick my daughter. You know, like being able to pass on, you know, my parents did their best to give me a better life than they had. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm doing the same thing for my children. In particular, I choose my daughter just because I named my company after Rosie the Riveter. So yeah. I hope that I'm giving her the tools to succeed. So I would like her to be able to tell my story.
That's great. Such a great role model you are too. Lisa, I thank you for taking the time today. It's really great hearing our Riveter story and your story and Cameron's story as well. Look forward to much continued success and many more military spouses being able to make more products.
Well, thank you. Thanks for letting us tell our story. And amongst the many stories that you've been able to share, it's a great honor for us. So
well, we are very proud to do it. Thanks so much. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Good Market Podcast. A new episode will drop the second Tuesday of each month, so make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening. Give us a like, a follow, and a share, and please leave a review so that we can reach even more people and grow even more good. Tune in next time to hear more stories from good people with great products supporting exceptional causes. We'll see you next month.